your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod host, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up!
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Tim Coker.
Tim Mattson.
And Sam Mattson.
Aha! There's an extra voice in there. We got, a woman's perspective, going to enlighten us all, and that's always... puts us in our place, basically, guys. You guys realize that, don't you? So, so
we'll
welcome...
see about that.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Sam. Now, you're not a stranger to the podcast. You, and... well, actually, when was it? What was it? Planet of the Apes? Was that the movie? We all sat down afterwards at the little barbecue place and all...
No, Guardians.
Guardians, that's right. The bigger movie. So, yeah, we all sat down and discussed that one. So Sam, you're not a stranger to this podcast, and that's a good thing. We don't like strangers, unless you have candy. Anyway, so today we're going to just mainly talk about one big topic, and that is a big, huge, raving review on Avengers. We're all going to throw in our 32 cents worth, because 2 cents aren't enough, and 32 cents is just a nice number to work with. You can divide it by two, and it's 16. So anyway, you know, I'm going to just one by one, I'm going to go with, we'll start out, and I want to leave Sam, not because... anything about you, it's just I'm going to have you throw in the last review of this movie because I want you to put it all together. So we'll start out with Tim Coker. Tim, what did you think of Avengers Age of Ultron?
I really liked it. I really, really liked it. And I think my estimation of it is growing over time. Like when I first saw it, it was one of those things where it's so overwhelming. There's so much in it. There's so much happening. And, you know, the action is so deliriously over the top, and every frame is just like jammed with something amazing happening. But at the same time, there's all that extra freight they have to carry for the Marvel Universe, which is, you know, no surprise in such a movie that would be crowded already. Having to do that extra duty, it makes the movie like funny shaped to me, but, you know... it's an overstuffed movie where all the stuffing is delicious, so I'm not going to complain too much about it, you know? I loved it, though. I loved, like, Avengers movies are unique because, you know, they had a chance to make a franchise for each of these characters and then bring them together, and it was so exciting to see them together, and that left on such a high note that, you know, it's really hard to see all those good times kind of fall apart, and that's what this movie does brilliantly, I think, is, you know, in its kind of overstuffed, shambling way, is the way it shows harmony becoming disharmony, you know, and how in the maybe over-choreographed opening fight scene...
maybe too Michael Bay, actually.
Yeah, I would say so, too, except that, honestly, when I watch it, because I've seen the movie a couple more times, it starts to look like a giant George Perez two-page spread where everybody's doing something awesome all at once, you know?
Yes.
And I kind of feel like you're being taken through something like that. And they do that a few times in the movie. And it's something that I've really come to enjoy in him. But I've got to say, the Michael Bayness of it was a bit much. The way it was trying to do that long, continuous shot from the Battle of New York in the first movie, but like up the stakes to 10,000, you know? I thought it was good. I liked how you see them effortlessly working together, right, in that scene. And how all of these really super cool combo attacks that I really loved, like with Thor and Cap's shield, you know, or just the Hulk showing up right when Black Widow calls for him and stuff like that. Like, you really see how well they work together. And then, you know, right after that, you see how well they play together. And they're so charming and so fun, and you just love them. But, you know, Tony has privately made this well-intentioned violation of that harmony. And what's amazing is that as the harmony is just so beautiful when they're having that great scene with the hammer, like, the harmony is literally broken by that feedback, you know, and Ultron comes in, and it all starts to fall apart after that. You know, you've got Thor choking Tony Stark, Natasha forcing Banner to change, and Banner choosing to abandon the team,
right?
You know, at the end of the movie. Like, I just think it's great how you see it all kind of fall apart. And while they find their way back by the end, they're not really back. You can tell that there's some more tension, you know, among the characters. I'm talking about, like, Tony and the rest. But I don't know. I just really, I like that aspect of it a lot. I thought the Avengers were all right on the money. They all got great little bits, mm-hmm. like great action beats, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And then great little character bits, but the characters who don't have their own movies, Black Widow and the Hulk, like I feel like, or Bruce Banner, I feel like I know them so much better after this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
They were
so
really fleshed out. You know, I dug it, man. I mean, I could go on for hours, but I know that you guys have a lot to say too. I would say, okay, last thing, okay. Two things, briefly. I love the Hulk. The Hulk, that it's the return of the monster, because I think that it was brilliant of them to reconceive of the heroic Hulk the way they did in the Avengers movie, where suddenly maybe it's not quite such a depressing pain in the ass to be the Hulk. And I love that, and I've enjoyed the storytelling where he's become kind of more mainstream since then. But at the same time, I'm glad that he hasn't been all the way tamed, and I'm glad they kind of brought the trauma back into the Hulk and kind of made him dangerous again in a way, you know, that the scene where he goes, I mean, people were absolutely killed in that rampage.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, no question. And it's horrific, and that it has consequences that really haunt him. And I think that that's great, because that is like 100% Banner for me. So I approve of that. And lastly is the focus on saving people. And I don't know if this was partly conceived as a rejoinder to Superman Man of Steel.
Well, hold on. Before you say that, I got to tell you, it's because they listened to this podcast and they heard how much we didn't like that aspect and they wanted to change it for this movie. That's what it was.
That was kind of them.
Yeah, I know.
But I loved how much bandwidth was used on them trying to save individual lives, you know. And mm-hmm. and from that appallingly dangerous situation of this giant raised hunk of city, which, by the way, is that not the most, like, that is like comic book as hell.
Oh, right? I know, right?
It's
yeah.
The most comic book things ever. That's right up there with an android with a crimson face and a golden cloak shooting laser beams out of a jewel on his forehead. Talk about not shying away, you know? So, yeah, I love it. I feel like it doubles down and goes all the way in, and it's not always pretty, but I love it.
All right, well, before we go to Tim Mattson, because I know he's got to have a bunch of fun stuff to say too, I want to throw in my 32 cents. Basically, I first got to start out with a review that my wife posted after I forced her to go see this, mainly because Isaac didn't want to go see it with me. He had other plans on seeing the movie. So anyway, so I forced my wife to go, and her review was...
not cool.
I know, right? But my wife, her review said, you remember that when your kids played with their action figures and you heard a, oh, you're a bad guy. Oh, no, I'm not a bad guy anymore. We're going to help you. Oh, oh, we're friends now. Yay. You know, she said that was her review. Yeah. That was her review of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's pretty spot nice. On.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
Yeah. And so it's like, but the best part about it is that's exactly how kids play with their action figures. And that's what these guys knew going in. That's how comic books are, is that it's a lot of that action with a little bit of a story, and, you know, you have fun with it. And it was a totally fun movie. I had a blast from the first moment. I mean, they launch you basically right after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they say, okay, call in the Avengers. That's where it is. Boom, the Avengers are there. And then they start the action. Yeah. It's right off the bat. I mean, there's a couple slow moments. I mean, I thought the party itself was a little bit slow, but it was kind of interesting. And everybody had their friends over, including Steve Rogers, whose friends happen to be World War II vets. You know, I mean, they're his friends, and they're at the party. And, of course, Stan Lee's cameo. But anyway, you know, it was like that almost slowed it down a bit, but it was just enough to keep my interest in the movie. Like, oh, yeah, okay, it's all their friends. I see that. And they're celebrating. Okay. And then, of course, the action starts again. And the action started with the AI, the great graphics with the battle between Jarvis and this Mind Stone and what will become Ultron. I just thought, I mean, even then, even though it was all graphics, it interested me. It kept me hooked onto the movie. And, of course, then all the, you know, he built all his robots and everything else. We got an intro. And the other thing about this movie, not only was it an Avengers event, but it was also an introduction to the rest of the Marvel world. I mean, we went to Wakanda. We got to, you know, what's his name? The Claw? Was that his name? The Claw, is that it?
Yeah, Ulysses Claw.
Yeah, Ulysses Claw. That's it. He was there, and then, you know, okay, Black Panther's coming up. Hey, we just saw Wakanda, you know, and then I wish they'd have thrown a little hint about him in the movie. That would have been even cooler. But, you know, you can only do so much. Let's see.
He hinted at the hint.
Yeah, exactly. We also got to see where Black Widow came from, which was, you know, that was hinted at in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or rather Agent Carter, I'm sorry. And so we got to see that, and then we got to – I mean, just a whole bunch of Marvel Universe coming together in this one movie, and you could tell – and then again with the little trailer, teaser trailer at the end, or whatever you call those little scenes, those cut scenes at the end of the Marvel movies, which, by the way, I was upset that they didn't have a second one. I was upset about that. Those are always cool, and they have the little funny one at the very end. But anyway, then you have, you know, you have Thanos – grabbing the gauntlet and saying, well, I guess I'll have to do it myself, you know? So it's like great tie-in to the rest of the Marvel Universe. And that, not only did this have a great story to tell and a creation of one more new superhero and the introduction to two more Avengers, but it also had an introduction to the rest of the Marvel Universe. And right now, one of the things I've been watching is the Civil War little photos that are leaking out on the Internet, or supposedly leaking. But they're showing, you know, Paul Rudd alongside Chris Evans, alongside, let's see, well, there's another one. Sam Wilson, the Falcon, that guy. So it's all these guys. It's like, holy cow, it's going to be another one of those movies. In other words, they take a whole bunch of stuff, put it into one movie, keep you glued in that seat. And I don't know if they're selling popcorn or not. They are at the beginning, but I'm not getting up to go get more. Because I was stuck in my seat that whole movie. And I'll tell you what, here's the worst part. Knowing it was the first, I went on the preview night, the Thursday night before they opened, and I knew it was going to be crowded. A lot of comic book nerds in the area. We went there half an hour early, and we were still late. We still got us not the greatest seats in the world. So I went in there, had my soda, drank it all up. Credits start, you know, the movie starts. Uh-oh, I got to go to the bathroom. I held it in for 2.5 hours. Just because I did not want to miss a single thing. I know. My bladder is, I now have to go get surgery. No. But I did. I wouldn't get up. Nothing was going to let me leave that theater. In fact, I don't think I saw a single person leave.
I think you may have just invented a new way to discover whether a movie is good or not. You have to drink a large soda before it starts. And if you can make it all the way through, it's a good movie.
Exactly. I think, you know, I think we're onto something here, because I did. I refused to get up. And there were some scenes where, like, oh, I bet I could do it here. Like when they were on the farmhouse introducing Hawkeye's family. I'm like, I'll bet this is boring. I'm going to go, nope, it's not boring. And that's another thing. We got to actually legitimize Hawkeye in this movie. You know, he's had his bit parts in Thor. He had, of course, really his bit parts in the other movies. In fact, it was so funny when Scarlet Witch was going to try to invade his mind, and he jabs her with the arrow and says, nope, I hate that. So, yeah. You know, because he's already had his mind controlled. So, but yeah, we got to actually find his family. It's really cool to find out that he was married to Velma. That's what I thought was so cool.
To whom?
Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Linda Cardellini played
Scooby-Doo.
Well, God. Oh, see, I
did not
know
catch that.
That's
incredible.
Oh, man. If they had had a dog walk through there, I'd have been great.
I think of her more as from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, yeah. True, but I just saw Velma. But, yeah, and just he had kids and everything else. And again, it finally, you know, people joked around. He was the Aquaman of the Avengers universe, not getting any respect and all this stuff. But finally, they legitimized him and showed why he belongs, mainly because of the family. And it's the weird thing that a superhero like that, he belongs to the Avengers because he's got a family.
He's grounded. I mean, reasons for doing what he does. He has something to protect.
Exactly. I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. Spider-Man has his Uncle Ben. Let's see here. We got Thor, of course, the whole mythos there. But Captain America, because he was made to protect America. Everybody has something they stand for. And now we found out what Hawkeye stands for. All right, well, that's mine. I want to say that I'm going to go see it as many times as I can. It will be owned on Blu-ray for me. It's one of those movies that you just can't miss it. And you know what? Here at the Eagle Theater in Robinson, it is still showing. And this is, what, the third week, wow. I think.
Yeah, I think it is third week.
Yeah, third week. And usually they dump it after two, you know, and move on to the next ones. But, nope, it's still showing here and still selling well. So, all right, Tim Mattson.
All right.
Let's hear yours.
I guess it's going to sound like I don't like this movie.
Uh-oh.
I actually do like this movie, but to tag off on the opening bit, I really have a problem with modern CGI films and their use of a virtual camera. Because they wave that camera all over the place. You get no sense of cohesion or sense of what the hell is going on. I mean, I'm looking at somebody's elbow, then I'm looking at a fist and a face, then I'm looking at a motorcycle, then I'm looking at this, then Thor is doing that, and they're not connected to one another. All these shots are taking place in isolation, so you don't get a grand sense of what is happening with the battle. So in that way, I do think it's kind of like a George Perez spread, where your eye is over here, you look at this, then you look at that, and then you look at this. I think that's accurate, but I don't think that translates to film well.
Yeah, you're right. It's not very cinematic.
No. That's my main beef with Michael Bay, and that's why I say that this opening was very, very Michael Bay, because it was not afraid to just wave the camera wildly over these random parts of the battle without really telling me the story of the battle.
I will say that subsequent viewings have made it clearer. But yeah, I take your point, because if you don't get it on the first viewing, it's kind of tough.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I should be able to get this on the first viewing.
Right.
But I found it just so chaotic that until it's kind of slowed down and caught its breath, I think it was really obsessed with like hitting the audience fast and hard and really dropping them into the action of the piece before slowing down. And I get that. I understand that's what you want to do, but you still have to make it comprehensible.
Yeah,
I did like James Spader quite a bit.
Oh yeah,
I do think he was maybe a little too hammy. I think they probably could have probably taken some ham out of that performance, and I think it would have been stronger. I think it was a little too wisecracky at times, and I don't know that Ultron is that wisecracky, but it was still enjoyable. And I think ultimately what the problem with this movie for me is that this movie isn't a movie that stands on its own. This movie carries water for all of the films to come. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really a movie that you're going to watch on its own. I'm not going to revisit Age of Ultron a bunch of times, I don't think, because it's a transitional film. It's not a film that tells its own story. It tells what's happening between Avengers 1 and all the other Marvel films to come. So to me, I don't think it stands on its own enough. And I really kind of wish that it did.
Well, and that's a really interesting point, because, you know, the Marvel movie is really, in a lot of ways, it's a very new animal. It's as different from previous superhero movies as Marvel Comics were from the status quo of superhero comics when they came out. Because of this idea of the shared universe and all that really strong linkage, like, all of the movies have to do some level of carrying water for the other movies, which is not something you're used to having to get from anything like this. And, you know, like it's weird, because, like, Captain America, the first one, right, is, I would say the first half of that is the first half of a brilliant film. Like, I just think a high pulp cinema art is mm-hmm. the first half of that movie. And as soon as he turns into Captain America, basically it becomes, I think we talked about this in the, you know, offline in our messages earlier this week, is that it turns into a kind of montage driven leap into the modern Marvel era. You know, that the second half of the movie is essentially connective tissue. And it's really unfortunate, because if they didn't have to do that, Captain America, the first Avenger, could have been a better movie in its own right than The Rocketeer, which would be a pretty amazing thing to be able to say, you know, because
that would be an accomplishment.
Yeah, but the thing is, at the same time, I own all the Marvel movies on Blu-ray and whatever, and I would say that with Captain America, the first Avenger, is maybe the one I played the most, certainly one of the two or three I played the most, and that I enjoy the most. So it's weird that the things that probably should bother me more don't, because I just enjoy kind of the Marvel movie experience, as it were. And it's weird that I would normally be like crossing my arms and getting very angry about it, but or impatient or whatever, but I kind of tend to be more forgiving of that stuff. It's, I don't know, it's my blind spot, I guess.
Agree. I think the Cap films are I think my favorite out of them. I think they have, it really all boils down to Chris Evans has so much heart that it makes those films really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. The Christopher Reeve Award, you know?
There you go.
It totally does.
For making the impossibly earnest character believable and somebody you root for instead of wanting to see him taken down. I can't imagine how hard that is to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just to throw one last thing in, this will actually connect to Sam talking about the movie, because we spent some time talking about it today, actually, and about Black Widow in particular, and some of what many people have found problematic with her character. I honestly wish, I really, really wish, that we had gotten a Black Widow film before this movie, because I still don't understand why there isn't one on the slate of movies, because it would be a great character to hang a film on, and really to see her blood-soaked past, I think, is something we need to see so that we understand the character more and about what her stakes are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, before we go into Sam, this kind of ties into something. One of the things, and you touched on this, Tim Coker, that makes this Marvel movies the Marvel movies is that they're not, I don't see any of them as really standalone. Guardians of the Galaxy is the most standalone so far, but it's going to link in somehow. But I think that's one of the things I like about all the Marvel movies is that they're not standalone. They're based on one another and the TV series. I talked to a lot of people that don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they were like, well, how'd this happen? And so I explained it. Now they're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know. So now it's like, oh, you mean I have to watch that? So, well, you don't have to, but it really helps. You know, it's like reading. I've read Spider-Man comics for years, and, you know, it's like the way they do the Spider-Man comics is every once in a while they do a crossover. And it's like, oh, well, now I got to go back and read the Avengers just so I can find out what's happening for this crossover. So it's I love the way they're tying it in.
I mean, Joss Whedon is currently fighting against that, though.
Is that right?
He has specifically said that he's trying to keep S.H.I.E.L.D. separate from the Avengers as much as possible, but they're kind of forcing him into putting it together. But he's been specifically talking about trying to keep it separate because he doesn't see them as connected. He doesn't even see the canon as completely lining up.
I agree. I kind of think that S.H.I.E.L.D., although it is connected, it's essentially the appendix or the tonsils of the Marvel Universe, because it's connected, but it doesn't really serve much of a function, doesn't it? It's just kind of there.
Well, the way I look at it is that it's leading up to the Inhumans, which is coming up. But the one thing is also Agent Carter tie-in. First of all, it ties in Captain America, ties in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it also ties in the room where Black Widow was trained, and that's kind of our Black Widow beginning movie, and that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I want to actually say that I've got a problem with Joss Whedon coming out and saying that he doesn't think that that he thinks that the MCU and the TV universe are two different things, because he lent his name and prestige to the launch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
Under the premise that it's an extension of and full part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And for him to backtrack on that, hey, if he's evolved his thinking, that's fine. But to me, it seems more than a little bit iffy for him to have lent his talent and prestige to launching the show and saying that it was real, and then now saying, no, it's just kind of a TV thing, you know?
Yeah, and you'd think also with the last episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he would have done more with that, because he directed, he had a large part in that last episode, so he'd have tried to take it in a different direction, but he didn't. He took it right up to the movie. But one more thing before Sam takes over, because I'm seriously anxious to hear what you got to say, Sam. But when we talked about Ultron, James Spader, I was watching it, and I'm a big watcher of the Blacklist, and I was watching this, and everything he did, Ultron did, was so James Spader in the Blacklist, so Reddington, and the way he'd tilt his head and, you know, kind of demean people, and the way he talked, Ultron did it. And every once in a while, because I always made a joke, you know, oh, the Blacklist, that's that episode, that was the one where James Spader tilted his head and really put down the guy that he was about to kill. And that's pretty much what he did as Ultron. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, you know, what they needed was Andy Serkis in this movie to do this for him. But then all of a sudden, Andy Serkis shows up as the Ulysses Claw, and I'm like, holy crap, there's what we needed. But he didn't have the funky makeup, though. So, all right, let's see here. Sam, I guess it's your turn. You need to say something. I want to desperately hear what you thought of this movie.
All right, well, I'm going to start out by saying I was really hesitant to come on for this week specifically, because I have kind of avoided deep discussion of this film because I had the opposite experience of Tim, where I was overwhelmed in a good way, and I was just like, yeah, comics, yeah, this is great, I love this. And then, like, upon further inspection, I was like, there are problems. And I just kind of decided I didn't want to address them. So that's kind of the angle I'm coming from. That's kind of my sum up of how I feel about it. It's like, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely, like, it fits in with everything in Marvel. It feels good to watch, but it just kind of had certain parts that I was like, they divided their focus so much, and they did a really good job with keeping everything in the spotlight, but they kind of, at the same time, it didn't feel like it completely worked for me looking back on it, I guess, that it just kind of fell apart at certain seams. But yeah, it's, I think it's, in terms of it feeling like a transition movie, I think we're getting to the point in the Marvel Universe where they're all going to kind of feel like that, because I think they all are starting to get to the point where it almost feels like you're watching an issue of a comic, or an arc of a comic, rather. Each one, even though it stands on its own and you can pick up an issue of a comic in the middle and read it and really enjoy it, it's still, it's coming from a past. It's coming from, you know, it's leading to a future. And that's kind of where the Marvelverse is at this point, I would say, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, there's really nothing like it.
Basically they're telling a broad story, and that, see, again, that's what I like about it, is that they're telling a broad story in these little, we have to wait a year between issues, or maybe 6 months, maybe.
Right.
I think it's an interesting feature of it. I really quite enjoy it, because I think it makes it very, you know, the anticipation of getting the next piece of the puzzle is very exciting.
Makes it more of an event.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Sam, what particularly did not work for you?
There's some issues with, I have some issues with how, more so on the press side and on the merchandising side than the actual film, but I have a lot of issues with how Black Widow's been represented by the actors, by the writers. You know, there's been a lot of really bad interview moments, a lot of really questionable things going on with that. You know, they had this whole thing leading up. They've been hyping up her backstory for a long time, being like, oh, the red in the ledger, all this stuff in my past that I have done that is cold and hard and that I need to make up for. And then instead of going into that first, it takes us directly into her insecurities as a woman. And, like, I don't dislike the use of this in her backstory at all. I think that the forced sterilization thing is really a very interesting character thing for her. I don't think it makes a woman weak to feel like she needs to have children, or that she should be able to, at least. But it just kind of threw me off that we were led into this with the idea that we were going to see more about her struggle to overcome her own darkness, and instead we get to see things that were forced upon her. And things that, you know, just, they just seem to use it because it fits into everyone else's story at the moment, and it doesn't really progress her in the way that I think we needed at the moment.
She's more of a passive participant than an active participant.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. And like I said, I don't think that part of her backstory bothers me. I just wish, like Dad said, if we had had something about, if she had had her own film before, or if we had had something about that side of her past before we got this, I think it would be fine. Just the fact that, you know, she's the only female Avenger currently. They've been teasing her backstory like crazy, and then it feels like a cop-out almost to me. But that being said, like when I watched it, I didn't think that. When I watched that the first time, I was just like, oh, what an interesting backstory. I really enjoy this. I think that's a good move. But then just thinking about it, I was like, but we never got to see what we were promised.
Right. Yeah, and that's one thing that's always been an issue with a lot of any action hero, you know, basically any movie they make of a superhero, all the way going back to the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve, that you don't know the backstory. And they slowly tell it through the movie a little bit at a time, and eventually you learn it. And with hers, through the two Avenger movies, and even a little bit on the Iron Man, but hardly any really in the Iron Man. But anyway, but during the two Avengers, you get such little teases that really it's like, well, I still don't know. And even with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. talking about the I forget what the name of the room is, but anyway, where they train them.
The Red Room?
Red Room, there we go. The Red Room, and you get little teases of that. It's like, still, we need one thing to tie it all in. We need just, whether a TV series or a movie, either one will do for me. But just something to tie that character in and put her, you know, basically, right now she's fluttering around. We need to actually capture her like a butterfly and put a pin right in the middle of her.
Yeah, I feel like the problem basically is just like they used this film as a way to kind of explore every character's more personal backstory and personal side and kind of their personal flaws and where they're coming from, not as a hero but as a person, I think. And we had had a chance with all the others to go ahead and get their hero backstory and why they're a hero right now.
Uh-huh.
And we just kind of skipped hers.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I feel. I think, I guess that sums it up.
Yeah, I think this one they may have intended to do a Black Widow, but all it ended up being a Hawkeye backstory instead. Because I mean that we got a nice Hawkeye.
I guess what I join in my concern with this whole Black Widow thing is I kind of side with Sam on this too. There is not another single character in the comic book Marvel comic book universe that their backstory is entirely tied up with their sex. And the Black Widow backstory is the only character that is really tied up with her being a woman and not being able to be a mother. That's what they're handing us here, but no other male character. Their backstory has to do with what they do and what they have done. Hers has to do with her sex and
with
what was
gender.
Done.
Yeah, that's the whole thing of the Red Room training is they were training women assassins, and we still need to know why.
I mean, it's not even like I don't have an issue with the fact that she's a flirty character and she uses her sexuality to get forward in life, and she does have these issues, and it's just like it felt really ham-fisted. We were talking about earlier where like she has a line that's like, "I'm always picking up after boys," with her lullaby to the Hulk, with the fact that we see Clint's family that kind of. She gets to be around children and be, you see her being motherly a lot in this. And I'm just like, where did that come from? I don't mind it. I just wish it had just had a root somewhere.
I think we can all agree on that 100%. It'd be nice to have a good Black Widow story. Like I said, either TV or maybe just a short run miniseries, anything just to give us a good back run of what she's about.
Well, anyway, moving forward, there are just a couple more things I had. In terms of the fight scenes, I'm at the point now where I go see a superhero film, and I will start to tune out during fight scenes because I know they're going to last a long time. I know what they're going to look like. I know what the cinematography is going to do. You know, they don't shock me anymore. I think this one succeeded in breaking up those moments for me, especially during the final big, like, escape from the chunk of Earth, you know, like, because they did have all those moments with saving people, and they did have a lot of character moments in those scenes, which is something that a lot of things, I think, falter in, but it's still, like, especially that beginning montage, I honestly couldn't tell you what happened. I just kind of, I watch it, I'm like, that's cool, that's nice, but I really want to get to the characters, and I really want to get to the action that's not just action to be action. So that's something about that. And then in terms of Ultron and him being so campy and over the top, I think in a way I enjoyed that aspect because it's especially in contrast to Vision, because I think Vision is what Ultron would want to be in a way. He's more controlled and he's less human. And I think that comes from, you know, partially from Jarvis being a part of him and him being a true AI, because I see Ultron as being less AI in a lot of ways because he comes from an alien technology, you know. He comes from something that's far beyond our understanding, and so it must be more sophisticated and probably more human in that way. So I see his drama, I guess, as being, and his self-centeredness in that way as being his kind of flaw. So, yes, it could have probably been toned down a bit, but I think that in where it was, I think it worked in different ways than it would have had it been toned down.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-824-5131 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-824-5131.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
Nerd Up Podcast.
Well, we just got joined by the late Eric Billingsley, and I don't mean late like as in he passed away, but late because he wasn't on time or the podcast. So, Eric, we just summed up what we thought of Avengers Age of Ultron. In the next 3 seconds, can you... No, I'm just kidding. All right, give us your take on the Avengers Age of Ultron, Eric.
All right. Well, first of all, I apologize for being late. I got roped into helping my mother with some things that needed to be done, and then I lost track of time, so sorry about that. But anyway, I am here, and I am sorry that I missed the other two or three, I guess, opinions on the movie, because I usually get a lot of things listening to you guys. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, hold on. Before you go any further, I'll just tell you, Tim Mattson, Tim Coker, and myself, we hated the movie, and we refused to go to any more Marvel movies, just to get you caught up.
Oh, okay.
Not true at all.
Yeah, we just fired Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, then. No, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Well, who knows? Everyone can drop the ball, but Marvel hasn't yet.
Never say never. The Ant-Man isn't out yet.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, like every time they come out with a new movie, it's just like, is this it? Is this going to be Marvel? This stuff? Unless you really, you know, unless you count Iron Man 2, and I would kind of almost put 3 in that category myself, which are still, compared to most other superhero movies or genre films, are still much, you know, much better than the typical. You can't say that they have really had a misstep. And I don't think that Avengers 2 is one either. But here's the thing, what I heard Sam saying, I agree with a lot of that, but she actually picked up on a lot of detail that I was just like, huh, I never noticed that, but she's got a point. And the thing is it's hard for me, if I came away from Avengers 1 with a lot of details in my head, and a lot of that had to do with following the character interactions. Now, I went into this movie having read a few reviews, so I already knew that the character was going to be light on character moments and really heavy on action, and I was prepared for that. But I was so bombarded with so much in every single frame of this film that it was hard for me to remember what was going on and tracking. I mean, I not that I couldn't follow the story, but now, you know, like a day, 2 days after I left the theater, I was having trouble remembering the plot line. I was remembering all these bits and pieces from the fights and stuff, but it was just so much that it was hard for me to retain anything. And for me to really give a proper review of this film, I really need to see it a second time. But I'll give you my impressions, though, just from the initial viewing. But I fully intend to watch this a second time, and I know that I'll get more out of it because I know what to watch for. But I, you know, I enjoyed the film. I, you know, other than that minor point and what Sam said about Black Widow. How many people need to say, we want a Black Widow film before they listen and do one? I mean, I saw this email that from Sony online. Now, this was, you know, it's not Sony that's doing this, but it really shed a lot of light on things. It was one in a chain of emails. But the gist of it was they listed, like, Catwoman, Elektra. There were, like, one or two other female superhero movies, and all of which completely tanked, and they're basically saying, we just don't think it's a good idea to do this type of film. You know, they can come out and say a female-fronted superhero film, but, I mean, that was pretty much implied. And I think that may be a big part of it, which is not necessarily in itself misogyny or sexism in any way. It's they're bean counters. They're looking at the bottom line, but they're not really thinking, they're not looking at the big picture. Those pictures
were
failed.
Also both pretty bad films, to be fair. So,
exactly.
You read those my films mind. Those are two
did
of the
badly
first.
Because they were bad films.
But unfortunately, do you think that guy knows what a good movie is or a bad movie?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. He's a bean counter, and that's the point. He would look at two, you know, at a brilliant movie and a horrible movie and simply only be able to tell which is good and which is bad by which made more money. That's a bean counter.
Right.
And that, unfortunately, is a reality of Marvel being a big big kid on the block now, is that they're, that mentality is going to be seeping in, you know, and they're going to be, you know, answerable to stockholders and, you know, into a bottom line. And so there's going to be these decisions made by committee. And I feel a little bit, no, I'm not even going to say a little bit. I feel that coming into the movie Avengers 2 a little more than I had previously. And I'm sure you guys have all read interviews with Joss Whedon, who basically has just, you know, now that he's out of this contract, he's like, I've had it. This was not a pleasant experience for me. He's not holding back any punches. And, you know, knowing what he said about it and watching this film, I was like, yeah, you know, I can see that, because Joss Whedon films are very, very character centric. And this one really lacked that. And I felt like it wanted to be there, but I felt like someone was standing behind him saying, no, we need more action scenes. We need more action scenes. Yeah. And I guess that's about it.
Okay.
Now, you guys have heard about Joss Whedon's original cut of the movie, right?
No.
Yeah, Joss Whedon's original cut of the movie was over 3 hours long.
Wow.
And it had to be cut down.
So I would have had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, so that it could play more shows per day, and it's way too long for the tentpole movie.
But we're going to get it on Blu-ray.
I get it. But yeah, Marvel... I don't have the press release in front of me, but I was pretty sure I read that it was confirmed that they were going to do an extended edition Blu-ray release of the movie. And I really want to see it, because one of the things that I think I felt, even coming away from it the first time, was that there was almost, like, the movie is all muscle and bone and no cartilage. You know what I mean? Like there are things where, you know, Teresa and I were, and we're like, you know, how does Ultron Prime and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver get around? How do they get from A to B so quickly? What are they doing? Is there a jet they've stolen? Whatever. And I realize that that's a stupid question to ask, and I'm not using it as a sticking point for the movie, but at the same time, I have no idea what the answer to that question is. And there are a lot of things like that in the movie where there are linkages that I feel are either missing or undernourished. You know, that there are transitions that I feel are abrupt and conclusions people come to.
Motivation,
yeah, so
the motivation of some of these people is totally a mystery to me.
Yeah, so I really strongly hope that they do this extended edition of the movie, just because I want to see more Avengers, because I like that stuff. But B, I really am curious as to whether it will be a better movie, because usually for a tentpole movie, I would say longer is not necessarily better, unless your name is Lord of the Rings. But with something that had as many buckets of water to carry for as many different causes, maybe seeing it with enough breathing space to try to carry it all, maybe it will move a little more gracefully. So I'm not saying that, hey, just wait, guys, it's going to be great, but I'm very curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks for bringing that up, because that's a perfect example that I just actually completely forgot about the twins, because their story is just so perfunctory, and that's it. And it's like, Hey, look, here's the twins. They've got these amazing powers. And okay, here's the analogy I'm going to make. The twins to Avengers 2 is Harvey Dent to Batman 2. It's a shoehorned story that didn't really feel like it belongs in this story. But they're right. Like, we need to introduce these characters. And I'm sure you guys probably, someone I'm sure has said something about this already, but what is the point of introducing Quicksilver and giving him no story at all, and then killing him off at the end of the spoiler, at the end of the movie?
Yeah, I bet you didn't see that coming.
Well, it's because they needed someone to kill, and they can't kill someone that's an established character. No, seriously, I think it's all about just the mechanics. They needed a character to die.
So okay.
They just threw
okay,
him in.
Let's get a show of hands. Who besides me would have traded Quicksilver for Hawkeye? No.
No way, because Quicksilver in this version was so boring. So boring.
I'll tell you what, I'll trade this Quicksilver for the other Quicksilver.
In a heartbeat.
Yes, absolutely. What? Yes.
That movie. Or at least his soundtrack.
All right, there you go.
I would trade this Quicksilver for the soundtrack of the other Quicksilver.
Pretty wimpy.
Oh, man. I
don't know. I still think it's a good deal.
I like this Quicksilver better than the other one, but I like the actor from the other one better. But I like
your mind.
I like the
how? Like, I need to know.
What do you mean? Why I liked him better?
Yeah.
Okay, well, mainly because his storyline was more precise to the comics than the other Quicksilver. The other Quicksilver went in there and stole a bunch of stuff, especially a lot of Coke products. And I think Tim Coker brought up that point one time. But, yeah, I mean, really, the other Quicksilver, all he did was steal stuff. I mean, and break into stuff. This Quicksilver actually was there to, and like in the comic books, there to protect his family. And yeah. I think that was that's more of the Quicksilver I know and the one that I enjoy.
But he had, he and his sister essentially functioned as one in this movie.
Right.
To me. They were completely, one of them was expendable. Mm. They had the same motivation, neither of them,
That's a really good point.
But that's the way they are in the comics, I think. I mean, they function as one. They just have separate powers.
Yeah, I actually want to say that strikes me as a strangely hostile take on these two characters who are being introduced in a very crowded movie. Because to me, you keep those characters around. We don't know a lot about them. But to me, I was intrigued enough that I wanted to get to know the difference between them and, you know, who they are and what kind of people they are. But to say that it's inferior to that crappy-ass version of him that was in the X-Men movie, where, okay, I get it. That scene in the Pentagon was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of the best things in the world. But the rest of the movie was such a garbage fire. And
it's a pilot burning garbage.
But on top of it, nothing about Quicksilver's appearance in the movie makes any sense. He's not any kind of a character either. He just has a really cool wardrobe and an anachronistic pair of earbuds that I don't think they made in the 1970s.
Yeah, I know, right?
But, you know, I mean,
least he had some personality, though. He was likable. This Quicksilver, I was like, okay, all right. I'm waiting for you to say anything that makes me intrigued, but you just aren't. You're just kind of sitting there being...
I don't know, I thought he was funny.
I thought so, too. Especially when he comes in and tells the people to evacuate, and then they don't do anything, and seconds later he's got a machine gun. Leave! You know, I thought that was a nice little, perfect Quicksilver scene.
Or the part where they're all arguing about, you know, whether to turn on the vision, and then he just runs around and
pulls
everything out. Like, to me, that is a very Quicksilver thing to do.
Yeah.
That is exactly what Quicksilver would do. And I thought, I don't know, I just kind of liked his Eurotrash, slightly arrogant sort of vibe. I thought it was much truer to the character, and I could see him kind of growing into a recognizable version of the character, which... As great as the special effects were, the off-brand version from the X-Men movie is nothing like the one from the comics. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
True. I mean, if he were to come back, he has potential to be much better than the X-Men one. But if he is dead right now...
I don't think he is.
He just had very little individuality.
They've got a machine that regenerates human skin and human organs. I don't think Quicksilver's dead. I think that was...
I think that was
knocking you in the head with a hammer on that aspect. So.
Well, you know, if Coulson's not dead...
Exactly. Exactly. I'm just thinking no.
See, that was another thing I saw with Joss Whedon having issues with is like he thought that Coulson being alive watered down the first Avengers, and it's probably, you know, because he's not the type to.
Did you not see the interview where did you not see the interview where he recanted that and said he was just joking around when he said that?
Oh, I didn't see that.
I
was actually, I couldn't believe the guts of a guy to say, yeah, it was really horrible how they brought back Phil Coulson in that script I wrote in episode.
Exactly. Well, that's what he said. Yeah. Then there was some interview that said.
I thought that was a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one that brought Coulson back. No, it's not they brought Coulson back. He brought Coulson back. Yeah, but
this is a comic book universe.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody stays dead except Uncle Ben.
That's true.
But I think that was just a hammer hit, maybe even Mjolnir hitting us in the head, was saying, oh, we can regenerate organs and tissue, and, oh, this guy died kind of, sort of,
that
brought back for a few seconds. So
I find that incredibly disappointing because I really honestly, and as much as I love Clark Gregg as Agent Coulson, I think he's great, I'm really disappointed that he's alive. Because I really, this is why, this is my problem with comic books. I want people to die and stay dead. I don't want them to come back. Because there's no consequences. Death is just a revolving door in comics. So much so that it's ridiculous. There are no stakes. You don't worry about anybody. Because if they die, they'll be back next time. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then again, they spend a lot of time saving lives.
Yeah.
That's true. Going back to the original argument, if you will, I think this Quicksilver best represented the comic book version of Quicksilver than the X-Men. The X-Men, though, I will say that movie, they had the better actor playing Quicksilver. Yeah. I love that actor. I love him and all the work he's done. And even better was when they were both together in the Kick-Ass movie. That was, you know, both Quicksilvers were in the same movie.
Oh, that's cool.
A superhero movie. So it's weird. But, I did like the other actor better, but I will say the parts that they had written for him in this film, to me, was the comic book version that I like. They should have put him in the completely green costume or the completely blue costume, whichever version you want to go with Quicksilver, but they stayed close enough with the blue. All right, guys, you know what? You know, we're out of time here. That's enough talk about Avengers. Let's just go see it again. Oh, but I want to ask, just as a little test here, have any of you guys seen Fury Road yet, Mad Max Fury Road?
Yes.
Okay, Tim Coker?
Nope.
I really want to. I almost went to see it this morning.
Okay, so Sam, you said nope. Tim Mattson?
I'm afraid not.
Okay. Well, you guys were
talking about it.
Yeah, we talked about how this is a nonstop action film. Wait till you see Fury Road. You'll pay for the whole seat. You only use the edge. But it's like it's a perfect example of one of those movies that it's like from the moment it starts. Yeah, and it's just like, and I love the fact that it's like the original Mad Max movies, not that Tina Turner one, but anyway, where there's hardly any dialogue and just a bunch of driving. That's what I liked about this
there
one.
Is very little dialogue.
Hardly any.
For a Hollywood film, that's amazing how little dialogue is in this movie.
But that's the point. If you want to, if you like movies that are nonstop action and don't have much dialogue in it, go see Fury Road. But the Avengers, Age of Ultron, it was nonstop action, but they had a lot of little bitty stories telling in between. Compare those two, you're gonna see a little difference of action movies. All right, folks. Let's end this podcast. Let's get it going. I got to go get rid of some tickets to the Indy 500. Then we got to get on with Memorial Day weekend, all that other fun stuff. So let me say once again, don't forget, you can check out the website, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. You can visit Amazon, click on the links there, and you can get some money tracks back to us if you buy something. You're going to shop on Amazon anyway. Go through our website. Get us some money back. Also, same with iTunes, and you can go to our T-shirt shop. You can get all sorts of really cool things. I just recently got for Isaac, I got it for me, but he took it, a nice little zippered backpack with the Nerd Up Podcast logo on the front of it. Looks so cool. I was ready to start carrying my laptop in it, but he stuck his in it and said it's his. And I guess that's the way it happens. That's how good of a product it is. It's got that beautiful artwork by Tim Coker on the front. So go get some T-shirts, backpacks, coffee mugs, whatever, and that helps support the podcast as well. Also, don't forget, NerdCon 2015 is coming up July 11th, 9 to 10 p.m. all day long at the Robinson Community Center. We've got artists. We've got, comic book artists. We've got Disney film artists. We've got all sorts of games, tournaments. We're going to be having some video game tournaments. We're going to have lots of cosplay going on. It's going to be a full NerdCon July 11th. 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. at the Robinson Community Center. Let me give you the address. It's one of those, I got it as a free one. I just put the website up together and just as a short-term notice, so I just got one of those free websites, so you have to deal with a little bit longer URL, but it's gil510.wix.com/nerdcon. Go to the website. You can check out all the things that are going on, and you can also like them on Facebook. It's Nerd Day Crawford County on Facebook, or just NerdCon. Find out. You'll find it. Anyway, so...
I had just one very important question about NerdCon.
Yep.
Will there be LARPing?
Yes, there will be.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
AmptGuard. It's a group called AmptGuard, and they're going to tell you how to AmptGuard. They're going to show you... They got the foam swords and everything. You can have big battles. You can challenge your friends, and there's going to be all sorts of... basically, they're not going to do full-on all-out LARPing there, but they're going to show you how they do it. They have a full battleground area that they've got reserved that they do theirs on, and so that's just like a small example at the NerdCon. So, yep, there'll be LARPing.
Sort of a LARPing tutorial.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So, in the meantime...
That should be the tagline of NerdCon, you know, there will be LARPing.
Good point. I might have to add that in. So we'll talk more about that as it gets closer. Let's end the podcast. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Coker. Tim K has to say.
I'm Tim Mattson at Tim Gone Mad.
I'm Sam Mattson, and I don't mess with Twitter.
Probably smart. Probably a smart thing. We forced Tim Coker into doing it, so.
Kick him out if you didn't get a Twitter address.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take away his nerd card. All right, so that's it for the Nerd Up podcast this time around. Thanks for joining us, and as always, stay nerdy.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv Plus risk-free and get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait.
800-489-1397. 800-489-1397. 800-489-1397. That's 800-489-1397.